ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I had been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love. Don't you?
Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
Think you was a hook. Trusted your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now lost in a day. Now the new M-Rogers getting away. Bank of the bank. Bigger rebel effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, it's not the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big safety net. Made from your savings. And 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialize losses while reaping the gain. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause you're just a pawn in the fertility stream.
Money talks, you pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us the dream but never deliver. While raking in fees, including the tickets. Siphoning funds from the mouthless bigot. Blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled the risks so nobody knows. How far ever go to a damaged collateral. Another excuse for oppressive control. When government kept you as part of the play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help but nobody came. And bailouts are poor and incomplete.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible, humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And our economies are largely X.
What would happen if we take the money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we get pulled out of capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the contilling effects with the will of
tomorrow. Step 1.
Let independent systems to remove the rush.
Step 2.
Move a savings in a system. So someone can evidence that
should. Step 3.
On stage, and sharing all activities moving this way. We were home, everything changed. We no longer positive to you
again. From the beginning, where was the tie of our desire and my way? And with the tie, earning a larger piece of life, or if you want to be in our life. Money is the honor of who everyone went. And to keep scoring of politicians, coming and capturing part of the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being sensitive. Move on from gambling savings. Move on from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't got to trust every word that they say. So people want to be taken.
Knowing that the fool break the frame, now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for history claim.
Open the door, it's in the game.
Good morning, and welcome to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and today is episode 60 of this space. And we're going to have a really good guest today. I see him already on the panel, but we have Ben with BTC Sessions joining us. And if you're new to this space, you definitely want to go ahead and give him a follow on Twitter. Want to give him a follow on YouTube. He's going to be your best friend as you kind of figure out the space and how to kind of utilize everything in our ecosystem. So I've got a questions for myself. We grabbed some listener questions in the audience. So I am really looking forward to jumping right into this. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Ben. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Excited to chat and what a day to do it. It was a hell of a time in the past 24 hours.
It really was. It was almost like it was meant to be. So I do apologize about canceling last minute on you, Thursday night. But I was really happy that you were able to, join us today. It kind of works out better.
Yeah, no worries. I'm just glad to be here and stoked to chat and, get people, leveling up their Bitcoin game.
Perfect. So I want to give you a little introduction. And then if you want to add some more information, because I know there's going to be lots missing. But in case, again, you haven't known, Ben has a YouTube channel, BT Sessions. He has over 1,700 videos, over 355,000 subscribers, and has over 12 million views for his videos. Again, I've watched a couple dozen of his videos. They've been very informal and beneficial for myself. And so I highly recommend going out there and checking them out. But Ben, what else can you tell us about yourself? How you got into this and kind of why you started it?
Yeah. So, I've, been around the block a few times, when it comes to Bitcoin. I got curious early on, just kind of tangentially. I was, I mean, it's kind of a weird story, but I spent the better part of a decade teaching little kids how to break dance. And that was kind of my main gig for a long time. But also that didn't quite pay the bills. And so, you know, everybody's always got their side hustles going on. And one of the things that I did, and kind of just self-taught, to do was I would buy used MacBooks and then I would tear out the hard drive and the RAM and swap them out for better parts. And then I would resell them and make some money. And so I was doing that on the side, but because of that, I was on like TechCrunch and a bunch of kind of techie websites, just like looking up stuff like that. And so Bitcoin would come across my purview now and again. And, you know, as I was kind of going down that rabbit hole over the course of a year, this would have been back in 2013, I would see it here and there, but each time I would see it and the price would be much, much higher. And, as everybody does at first, oh, I'm too late. I missed the boat. And I did that three or four times that year until it went from double digit prices to quadruple digit prices. And I was like, okay, either this is a giant scam or there's something more. And so then I spent the better part of 3 months just kind of reading and trying to understand what the hell it was before I ever dipped my toes in. And then when I did start down that rabbit hole, I'm a pretty visual learner. And so my first knee-jerk reaction was, okay, if I want to learn how to do this, I'm going to go look up videos that people have put on YouTube about how to do it. And to my surprise, there were none. And so, a lot of the, help that I got was like, go to this random, talk forum and scroll down through the comments about halfway and there'll be somebody posted a description of how to do it with bullet points. And I was like, I do not learn this way, but I was kind of forced to because there was nothing else. And, so I just spent a couple of years having to either do that or just muddle through it myself and screw up and then fix my mistakes. And so after a couple of years, I was like, okay, I'm pretty comfortable with a lot of the basic tools and nobody has made any videos still. So I guess I'll just start throwing some stuff together and hopefully somebody will find it useful. And so I told myself once a week, I would put together a tutorial on whatever I felt like covering. So that would have been in June of 2016, and I have been running the channel ever since. So it's been about 8.5 years that the channel has been running, that I've been doing tutorials on Bitcoin, and it's been going well. And now, as of 2020, that has been my full-time gig, just doing the channel. Before that, I did work for a handful of Bitcoin companies as well, doing some stuff, but I love it. No intention on leaving anytime soon. And it's been a hell of a ride.
Oh, that's awesome. I like hearing that. Can you recall like which video it was where you're like, okay, there's something here. I could probably make a career out of this or make this full time.
Yeah. I think I was pretty cautious about the idea of just doing the channel for quite some time. Like it would have been the 2017 run. Over the course of that year that I started kind of moonlighting on the side, at an OTC, like physical walk-in desk where people could bring in cash and buy Bitcoin. But even then it was like, okay, I'll do this on the side for a little bit. And then by the end of the year, that and the channel, I was like, I cannot focus on my regular job. And so by the end of 2017, I kind of threw in the towel on my typical fiat job and just went all in on Bitcoin. And then, it was towards the summer of 2020 where it wasn't necessarily that I for sure knew that I could swing it, but it was that, I gradually discovered about myself that I hate people telling me what to do as I think a lot of people do. I actually hired, kind of like a personal business coach. And I said, like, listen, I don't want to work for anybody anymore. I want to do my own thing, through the channel, and I want to see if that's feasible. And so, I mean, the guy just, you know, when you think about it, it's really just simple. He was like, okay, well, what possible revenue streams do you have? Okay, great. Well, then you just need, you know, this is the quick math on what you need to make through each revenue stream in order to replace your salary. And I managed to do that inside of 2 months, which led me to say, why the hell didn't I do this sooner? But such is life. And I'm super happy doing what I do now. I literally get to tinker with awesome Bitcoin tools, learn about them, and then shout from the rooftops about how cool they are. Like, what a job. Amazing.
Yeah. And there's nothing like just going to work, loving what you do. It just makes it more enjoyable. And I think that's pretty evident in the content that you produce. You don't going in there with just a grudge on your face or just trying to blow through it. You're very methodical. You explain everything. So it definitely shows in your work. Was your best coach a Bitcoiner, or were you able to orange pill him?
Yeah, actually. So I worked alongside him for a while at Bull Bitcoin. So Bull Bitcoin is in Canada. And I was there for, I did some work for them for about a year and a half, but he was, somebody that, did a contract there for a little bit. But he had previously owned and sold businesses of his own. And, he's just a very kind of conscientious, methodical guy who just gave some really practical advice, and it was super useful. And it just kind of, you know, kicked my butt into gear and made me realize, like, you can actually do these things.
So how did that conversation go? Explain to your wife that you wanted to do this full time. Did she pretty easy or a little pushback?
Well, her disposition was always, as long as you're putting food on the table, then you do whatever you want to do. You know, cautiously so, but, she's always been super supportive. And that was also, you know, I had relationships before I met her that were not that. And so being in a relationship with somebody who is super supportive in that way is very, very important to me. And so, she, no matter what rabbit hole I was diving down, she was always very much, all right, yeah, I got your back. You can absolutely do it. Just remember, like, especially, you know, in 2017, when I opted to quit my regular job and go all in on this, like, we had a kid already by then. So, I didn't take that decision lightly, and neither did she, but she also supported me. And, you know, we've been through shit before. You know, we've had hard times before where we've had to figure out how to make ends meet, and we're resourceful and driven, and we've always done it. So, so she's just kind of always had my back. And now actually she understands Bitcoin better than I'd say most people that own Bitcoin at this point, like partly through osmosis, but also like now she helps me clip up my Friday panel shows and picks out clips that go up. So if you see on my feed, Bullish Bits, she's picking out those clips from previous episodes. And because of that, the conversations that have spurred from that, where she'll watch, you know, originally when she started doing it, she'd listen to a show and be like, Ben, get in here. I have no idea what the hell this person has just said. But because of that, the questions get sparked, and then we talk through things. She actually understands quite a bit about Bitcoin, and I'm continually just absolutely impressed with her in that regard. But like, you know, when she helps me out, I'm sending her Bitcoin each week, and she uses it to like, you know, pay for stuff and get gift cards and, do all kinds of stuff with it. So she's actually pretty good, and she's come to some Bitcoin events now. And the first time she went to a big Bitcoin event and got back, she's like, I actually really like these people. They're pretty great. So, yeah, she's just awesome.
So, I'm pretty sure it's public knowledge, but I don't want to dox the city that you're from. Just give me a thumb.
It's fine. It's Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
I just want to make sure. I grew up kind of close to you up near Cold Lake, so I'm pretty familiar with it. And you kind of set out and you start the Sats market in Calgary. I'd like to kind of pull on that a little bit and how, like, what made you want to start this and how successful? Now, it looks like it's very successful now, but how long did it take before it really started going?
Yeah. So, the Sat market is basically just a collection of people that, you know, we all have goods or services or, you know, individual businesses or whatever, as everybody does, but we're all willing to accept Bitcoin for it. And so, the impetus for starting it was, it would have been around this time last year, there was a big scare where, a couple exchanges shot up the warning bells like, hey, if you're trying to use like privacy tools and CoinJoin and stuff, and then you're going to the exchange, you're going to want to add a hop. Well, like without explicitly saying it, they're going to be like, if you send directly from a CoinJoin to the exchange or from the exchange directly into a CoinJoin, it's very likely that your account will be shut. Or if we let you do that, then our bank accounts will be shut. And a lot of people kind of got a little pissy about that, about like just, to me, it came across as like a warning, like, hey, just so you know, add a hop. But everybody was complaining, but nobody was really kind of putting two and two together and saying, okay, well, you know, how do we prevent stuff like this? And in my mind, it was the only way that you fully get away from people being able to, tell you how to use your Bitcoin is to directly transact peer to peer and buy and sell goods for Bitcoin. And so like, I don't know why that moment in time, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And so like, I had like a bit of a rant that I post. I was like, basically buck up or shut up. Let's get this shit on the road. Let's actually do something about it. And so I was really fired up and I was like, you know what? Everybody's saying, you know, everybody's freaking out about this. Screw this. I'm going to make a market and we're going to do it in 4 weeks. We're going to do a Christmas market. We're going to throw it together and it's going to happen. And literally within 4 weeks, just simply by going to the local Bitcoin meetup and talking to people and being like, all right, guys, this is what we're going to do. You all do something. You all have a skill. You all make something. You all have a business, whatever it may be. You have something that you can offer for Bitcoin. Like you're already accepting dollars and you're changing some of those dollars into Bitcoin. You all understand that Bitcoin is better money. Why in the hell are you not just accepting Bitcoin for what you do and then just keeping some of the Bitcoin that you get for that? And as Bitcoiners, it's funny that people don't put two and two together. And some do, but I'd say they're not active enough about it. Like you can't just slap a Bitcoin accepted here sticker in the window and expect Bitcoiners to find you. You got to talk about it regularly and you got to talk to Bitcoiners about it regularly. And so within 4 weeks, we assembled a group of, I believe it was between 30 and 35 different merchants. And it wasn't just like people with like Bitcoin merch with a B on it. It was like local farmers. It was, so we have, you can now get beef and eggs and jerky and dairy and all that stuff, from the people that are associated with the market. There are tradesmen. So there's like plumbers and roofers and people that do flooring. You can get like skincare and tallow products and all this kind of stuff. There's even a hypnotist that accepts Bitcoin. I have a personal trainer that accepts Bitcoin. There's somebody that goes and cleans houses and accepts Bitcoin. There's all these different people, barbers. There's, an author that writes children's books. There's all these different people, woodworkers, artists, just you name it. There's a lot of different stuff and a lot of great stuff that like my main goal was to try and start to fill the gaps where yes. And side note, I've been living on Bitcoin for 4 years here, but, oftentimes I'll use services that kind of help me bridge those gaps. But the main goal here was to, remove the need for some of that. Like for a bunch of stuff, I no longer need to use some mechanism to convert into local currency. I'm just using the currency I prefer directly and the other person is accepting it. And so we threw together this market. We had between 30 and 35 merchants, something like that. We had this market that ran, 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. or something like that. We had giveaways. Each one of the merchants threw something in for a giveaway and a raffle at the end of the day. We had some live chats and talks. We had Christmas music going. And in my eyes, it's been a fantastic success. And so at the end of the day, my takeaway is that it's always easy to shut you down when you're reliant on another business fully to be able to utilize your Bitcoin. But when you create peer-to-peer relationships and you know the person you get your eggs from, you know your barber, you know somebody that can fix your floor if there's, you wreck it. Those are the most important and most resilient relationships that you can make. And now we've got this network going. It's still early days. But we're doing another sat market here in just over a month. So we're doing our Christmas sat market. We try to do it a couple times a year, just to keep some of the anticipation up. But then we also just know each other and we have like a Telegram group and everything. And so we can just locally chat. And I always throw things in there like, hey, I'm looking for this and I'm looking to pay in Bitcoin. And even if there's not somebody directly in the group that does that thing, often through like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of way, they'll know a guy who knows a guy. And even though they may not have Bitcoin yet, it plants the seed and it gets them interested. So I'm mega bullish on creating local markets where you are. And I would challenge everybody here to start with the local Bitcoin meetup and then go from there, right? Don't start with the random people that aren't going to care. Start with the local Bitcoin meetup. And then friends and friends of friends and all that kind of stuff. And you can gradually build. So yeah, that's my rant.
No, that was perfect.
Right. And so, I got to nail him up on this one. Sure.
Yeah. So that's, it's good that you did that, Ben, because we've been talking about, like the importance of spreading the message of Bitcoin and showing people the power of what it does. And there's no better way than just starting in your local community. I think a lot of Bitcoiners try and move the entire mountain themselves and they want to make it just countrywide or across their state or province, wherever you're located. But it's so much easier just to start a grassroots local movement with your local farmers, you're just your local merchants. And so again, it's really good to hear you say that and to see the success that you're having from it. And again, all it did was it just took some back and forth communication, some emails, some text messages, and you're able to get this going. So, it's really cool to see that.
Hell yeah.
So I want to go ahead and ask with this recent price action, we're going to have a ton of new people jumping into this space and discovering it, discovering Bitcoin. So what are some of the most important things that you think new people just getting in should be made aware of?
Yeah. So, I mean, the base level stuff that I think the average person, your three tick boxes that you really want to get off right away is number one, where you're going to obtain Bitcoin. You know, you want to get some place that I would say is Bitcoin only. that isn't going to give you scrolling marquees of like gambling on tokens and all that stuff. You don't want to be distracted by all that garbage. You just want to focus and again, treat it as a mechanism to store the fruits of your labor well into the future. And yes, of course, you know, you can always get into the whole living on Bitcoin thing over time, but that may not be the first focus for a lot of people. And that's fine. But one, where are you going to obtain your Bitcoin? Two, learn the basics of self-custody. And this is where you can just simply get a Bitcoin wallet on your phone and just learn how to send and receive, delete the wallet and restore it. Just so you're familiar. Okay. This is how keys work. I know what a seed phrase is. And then finally, how are you going to secure it? So obtaining Bitcoin, using Bitcoin and securing Bitcoin. And when I say secure, you probably going to want a piece of hardware. I'm personally partial to the Cold Card, or a cheaper alternative from the same guys at Cold Card, the Tab Signer. I really like those. But obviously there's plenty of hardware options out there. Not all are made equal, but, there are a lot of good options. So again, go ahead.
I was going to say, what are some of the, I like Cold Card as well, partly because of your videos, they're easy, but what's a hardware wallet that, that you'd recommend for something new that doesn't have, you know?
Yeah. So this is where if somebody's just dipping their toes in and they're unfamiliar, I typically either go, Cold Card or Tab Signer. So Tab Signer is, if anybody doesn't know what that is, it's basically just like, it looks like a credit card or like a hotel room key. And functionally how it works is you have a wallet on your phone. You can load the wallet easily without the need for the card, at any point. But if you want to spend, the wallet will say, okay, first put in your PIN. And then once you've put in the PIN, it requires you to tap the card to the back of the phone, like an NFC tap card. And so what this does is it just gives you a layer of security where if somebody gets a hold of your phone, they can't spend your money. And if somebody gets a hold of the card, they can't spend your money because they also need the PIN. So you just have some layers of security. It's not as good as a device where you have a screen and you can confirm everything. But you know, for those that are curious, like anybody can go and like check the code and make sure it's working the way it's supposed to. As long as you're using it with like an open source, app on your phone as well. But for the time being, it's like a good, cheap, beginner friendly alternative to something like a Cold Card. And even Cold Card itself has levels to which you can use it. Like, yeah, you can go hardcore and do the air gapping and use SD cards and all that. But if you're a beginner and you're super timid, you can always go simple and just like plug it into the computer directly. And then it's just like having a PIN and hitting a check mark. So, you know, I know that there's definitely people that are going to say like, you have to do this, that, and the other thing right out of the gate. But if pushing somebody to do that right away causes them to turn around and leave, it doesn't matter what somebody's first step is. It matters that they continue down the path. And so like, just as you wouldn't make fun of a grade one kid not being able to read human action because they're learning their alphabet and putting together words and sentences, you don't need to make fun of somebody because the first thing that they do isn't the same action as a hardened Bitcoiner of 10 years. So yeah, that's kind of my take on that.
Oh, that was good. Yeah. And I think a lot of us forget what it was like to just start off into the space and being under, and it does seem a little intimidating when you see and you have to memorize 12, 24 words. But one of my biggest pet peeves is when people say that, and I'm not saying that, it's not intimidating, but when they say it's difficult to store your own keys, I really get frustrated with that. And I don't think we're giving people enough, they could hold their own keys without it being detrimental. Like you're really only remembering 12 or 24 words. If you remember three different phone numbers, you can remember 24 words. And so how can we help like get rid of that stigma where it's complicated?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that the reason most say it's complicated, it's gotten a lot easier over the past few years. Well, ever since I've been in Bitcoin, it's been getting easier and easier to deal with. But because it's so new, right? Like everybody had a learning curve when online banking happened, right? Like that would have been impossible for a lot of people. But now like you have grandparents that will go onto their online banking from like an iPad, right? So it's not the tools got easier, but also it just in general became more familiar. And I think that's kind of where we're at with Bitcoin, where it's new and unfamiliar and the tools are not yet super easy, but it has gotten infinitely more accessible ever since, you know, I've been around Bitcoin, and certainly in the last few years, it's continued to get easier. And so, yeah, when somebody says that the average person cannot secure their own Bitcoin, I think that's bullshit, to be honest. I think that we take care of super important stuff all the time. If you have a passport, most people don't just go about throwing their passport around and losing it. It can happen, absolutely. But there's an expectation like, hey, this thing is super important. Don't screw around. Also, many of us have children. Not a good idea to lose those. Not a good idea to let them starve. And so like, if you have kids, you have a lot more responsibility than like dealing with your Bitcoin. And so if you have a child and you've managed to raise and keep that child safe, then also qualified to secure your Bitcoin. I would say that any person that is capable of using a smartphone and downloading an app will have the technical skills necessary to secure a seed phrase. And again, you can do things like stamping it into steel and everything like that. And then if there's a fire, you can still access the seed phrase. Like there's lots of things that you can do to make yourself more resilient. And if you really, really don't trust yourself, there's even things like using like an assisted multi-sig setup where you have like a couple seed phrases, but if you lose one of them, then a company has a third one and they can be the second signer in something like that. So like you kind of got your butt covered in those instances. So anyways, the long and the short of it is people are more than capable of it. It's laughable that we've been told to take responsibility for everything in our lives except for our money, because how dare you think that you could possibly be responsible enough to secure your own money. You better leave it with somebody else so that they can rehypothecate it and steal from you.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned children. A lot of Bitcoiners, I think, draw like a National Treasure map from the movie for like little hints and clues for their significant others and children to access their, you know, their keys or their Bitcoin if they were to pass away. I've also heard people just say, well, I'm just going to reach out to this public figure. So, hey, spouse, go ahead and reach out to Ben with BTC Sessions and just show him this and he'll help you acquire my Bitcoin. Do you recommend any of those plans, or is there a company that you recommend to help people with like inheritance and passing away suddenly?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to attack it. And I typically say to people, the way that you tailor your setup is going to depend on how you perceive risk personally, because I'd say there's like buckets of risk. One of the big buckets is human error, and that can come from yourself, but it can also come from the loved ones that you mean to pass it on to. So in that bucket, you want to keep things relatively simple or really resilient against human error. And so by simple, I mean like maybe you just have a single device and your family is aware of the PIN code And then you've got a seed phrase for them. And then you have like a simple, if you're super confused, watch this video or, reach out to, you know, like I have a company called Bitcoin Mentor that helps people one-on-one just walking through custody and walking through various different parts of their learning journey. But, you know, you could have something simple like that. Now, if your worry is, single points of failure or physical coercion, then you're worried about, you know, somebody kicking in your door and stumbling across your seed phrase or threatening you, to give up your Bitcoin. And at that point, then you may have something like a passphrase on top of your regular, Bitcoin wallet, where you maybe have like a decoy wallet that's kind of on the base level. And then when you add your passphrase, it goes to the real Bitcoin. So you can do stuff like that. But if you're really worried about physical coercion, that's where you start going, okay, well, maybe I have a multi-sig. And so then you have multiple keys required to unlock your Bitcoin and you disperse them in different physical locations. And then that becomes untenable for somebody to, you know, come to your home, get one of the keys and then take you for a ride and go on a countrywide road trip to collect the other keys. Like it just becomes, it's too much risk for them, too much perceived risk for them. So there's lots of different ways to handle it. And I'd say the other bucket of risk is, are you worried that the state is going to come for your Bitcoin? Because then if so, then that is also throwing in a privacy part of it where you're obtaining Bitcoin not through the typical exchange, but peer-to-peer, you know, without KYC kind of thing through like, peer-to-peer markets or exchanges or whatever. So there's different levels to it, but I would say it's okay to have a couple of different setups based on those perceived risks. And so maybe you have like an easily super accessible, like simple setup where you know your family is for sure going to access it if something happens to you. And maybe you have a slightly harder to access, but you've given detailed instructions to your family stack where it's like, if the state goes a little crazy and comes for everybody's Bitcoin, then you've got a little nest egg that nobody really knows about other than the closest members of your family. So, yeah, I know that's a long answer, but, you know, it's a nuanced one that needs to be addressed because everybody's concerns are a little bit different.
No, that was perfect. And BitPetro, before we get to you, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com, Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com, Punchplate, like Ben said, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate, punchplate.com, and Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. And BitPetro, sorry for making you wait so long, but go ahead and fire away your question.
Good morning. Good morning. I just wanted to chime in on a couple of thoughts that were there, pull some threads. So one is, I want you to talk about, it's a little bit of a thankless job to be a Bitcoin community leader. It takes a little longer than one meetup or two. Consistency counts, and I think you've shown that in your journey. I really want to hear, you know, what your experience was through that and, you know, how are you reaching out to your local community in a way that expands your reach to not just the tech pros, but maybe your local officials, and maybe even your centers of higher education. That's something that I'm trying to do, but I'm just curious if you've taken a stab at that. And then on a second thread, I want you to kind of dive into the idea that like you can make it super, super simple that you don't need hardware devices to create seeds that are, secure enough that we're we're created in an offline environment, and that, you know, sometimes pen and paper or, you know, just making sure that you have a common sense approach to putting these words in relative homes can assure you from fire, tornadoes, et cetera. Cause I think it's not spoken about enough that you can really, really keep it simple. You don't have to go get a cold card. Although once you've reached a certain level of wealth, I think you owe it to yourself to not only go for a signing device, but probably really get into multi-sig, because you should be trying to make it harder to access, not easier, but yeah.
Yeah, no, those are great threads to pull on. Absolutely. So I guess I'll go with kind of the outreach part first. So I mean, this is kind of a new area for me, in that I guess I kind of started with a pretty wide audience, in terms of education. You know, I started with the channel and then realized in retrospect, like, what, I mean, I was going to say, what the hell am I doing? But like, not that, but, I feel like I should be placing equal importance on the local. And I believe that to be very, very true. And I think for the average person, yeah, absolutely. Like if you want to have and try and have a large reach, please do. But for the average person, you really, really should place an emphasis on locally trying to build. And so like, how have I, dealt with outreach when it comes to like local official, you mentioned local officials and higher education. I wish I had specific answers for those types of things. For us, what it's been largely is starting with our local Bitcoin meetup, which luckily we have, a pretty good group of people that, you know, I'm going to, you know, the shout out to the guys that have been running the YYC Bitcoin meetup, cause they've done an incredible job and they've been leading the charge for years here doing all this. And so it felt easy and natural to be able to plug into that and come to meetups and start to say, hey, like at the beginning of a meetup, can I get up for a couple of minutes and just say, that I'm looking for something to be able to pay in Bitcoin, or, you know, do a little announcement or let people know that I'm putting on a market, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was easy to, gain access to an existing group of people, but obviously first you got to get a local meetup going first. And so in certain jurisdictions, that's going to, be the priority number one, and you're going to have to build that up. In terms of outreach to locals, when it comes to, when you were saying local officials, are you referring to like local government? Like what were you, getting at with that one?
Yeah. So, I happened to just be in the one municipality that decided to raise their hand and say, we're going to mine Bitcoin. So, you know, I felt an obligation to, shove those words down that mayor's throat. And so I've done what I can to build a meetup in the city, but, you know, they did it as a flag in the sand type of thing, more of a way of saying Fort Worth is the new frontier, the new West, right? Like, and it was well played and appreciated, but certainly, you know, that has not translated into a continued voice as an advocate for it. It was more of a opportunistic time in place. Now, luckily I took that attention and then kind of looked at it from the, who is the tail wagging the dog in this city. And that was the university. So, I focused on, rather than trying to, you know, focus on city council and say, you know, we must do something other than mine with an S19 and turn it into fiat. That's nice, but not it. and really have like tried to take the approach that, you know, the university is eventually going to be the institution that is here longer. And it's probably going to be the institution that drives change to not through knowledge, right? And so like, I figured it'd be better to focus on that, but I feel like there's not that many of us that are taking stabs. I mean, Dennis Porter certainly is who I think a lot of, you know, he is a very good promoter of himself. I'm not, you know, so credit where credit's due, that that's what he does best. But I'm curious as to others that are kind of getting this, like, been an educator, been in the space, trying to make an impact, and where are you seeing the salt stick, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so a couple things that I've seen in my city, and this may not pertain to everybody, but I'll just kind of tell what I've seen locally. I don't know what it is, but local initiatives that tend to cater to governments just love the word blockchain and are oddly averse to Bitcoin. I think there's been some
that's universities too, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I don't know what it is where, you know, every major institution just seems to be like 5 years behind, 6, 7 years behind, you know, they're stuck in 2017, with like, distributed ledger technology and all that crap. You know, bananas on the blockchain kind of thing, supply chain. I don't know what it is, but trying to infiltrate those spaces, not in a, not in an abrasive way, but asking the good questions. And there's going to be some in those spaces that, are defensive, but when you ask certain questions that elicit very poor answers from the people that are getting defensive, then people in those spaces begin to wake up. So like in my experience, there's a local bank in Alberta, called ATB, and they often host these, you know, where speakers can come in and talk about their businesses or whatever. And, you know, there's involvement in blockchain, this, that, and the other thing over the past number of years. There's also, something called the Alberta Blockchain Consortium. And then now I think it's like the Canadian blockchain something or other. Anyways, being in those spaces and, you know, they'll have their events, but being the person, if you can get in a position where you're able to speak or be on a panel or something and just asking simple questions like, okay, so, you're trying to track real world items on the blockchain. And the idea is that you've got an immutable ledger. So my question is, if you put data onto the blockchain and you've incorrectly entered that data, does that not then mean that you now have incorrect data forever? And if the response is, well, then we'll make sure that we amend it, then you say, well, if you're able to change the data on the blockchain that you're using, doesn't that mean that the blockchain is then not immutable? So what problem are you actually solving with either of those things? Because either you get bad data forever or you have a supposedly immutable blockchain that can actually be changed at any point. And so asking those questions out loud in front of large groups of people can start to shift sentiment and start to shift the mindset of the room without coming off like a total asshole and just like pitting the room against you because everybody's kind of invested. People begin to go, huh, that was a good question. And that was a bad answer from the other person on the panel. Again, I wish I had better answers in terms of like local outreach and everything, but I'll hit on your other point really quick. Cause I know that, I'm taking a little long on these responses, but, in regards to the, you know, how you can create wallets and deal with Bitcoin in a way that's free out the gate. Yeah. And I kind of refer to that in my learn how to obtain, how to use, and then how to secure Bitcoin. So depending on how much Bitcoin you're dealing with will depend what you're doing. But, right out the gate, yes, absolutely. Like you can use software wallets and everything like that without having to, without having to get hardware. And furthermore, you were talking about offline, trustlessly creating seeds. You can go as far down that rabbit hole as you want. Like I have a video where I show how to mathematically with pen and paper and dice create a seed phrase without connecting to the internet. So you can absolutely do that. And on a simpler front, you could lots of different things like this, but one's called Entropia. I believe it's the guys who make Seed Signer made it, but it's like every possible seed word in a big jar on little 3D printed pills, and you shake it up and then you pull out your seed phrase minus the last word, and then you can mathematically calculate what the last word will be. But yeah, you can absolutely do it as privately, as offline as you please, and you don't need hardware right away. But I would say if you start getting into, you should probably treat your Bitcoin as if it's worth 10 times what it is right now, because eventually it will be, and then you'll be prepared for it. And so like if your threshold for wanting to have hardware is $10,000 worth of Bitcoin, then when you've got a grand, you should probably at least start learning about hardware and just maybe becoming familiar. And then as you start eking up towards that threshold, you're already prepared and you're not scrambling because you're worried about having 10 grand on an app on your phone. So that would be how I would approach it.
No, that's perfect advice, Ben. Like again, a lot of people underestimate how much, that their Bitcoin can be worth. So always treat it like it's worth 10 times more than what it is right now. And that's a really good rule to follow. Ben, are you guys still doing the Bitcoin conference during the Calgary Stampede?
We are, yeah. So we've been doing that the past couple of years. We're doing it again this coming year. Actually, the first one we ever did was in 2018, and then we took a little breather from it and started doing it the past 2 years. And that first one we did in 2018 was actually Saifedean's first Bitcoin conference speaking immediately after he wrote the Bitcoin Standard, which was kind of a cool thing to have. And he killed it, obviously. But yeah, so we're doing, it's called the Bitcoin Rodeo. It happens the week leading up to Stampede. And again, we're in Calgary, so we're about an hour drive from the Rocky Mountains. So Banff, Lake Louise, all of that out there. It's beautiful. And then also tangential to the Bitcoin Rodeo, we always, of course, host a sat market now. So, we have that, and then, we're going to start incorporating, like a trip to the mountains in and around, the sat market as well, and the Bitcoin Rodeo. And then of course, Calgary Stampede happens immediately after that. So, I would highly encourage, if you're looking for stuff to do that last week of June leading into July before the Calgary Stampede, you should probably make a trip to Calgary, come visit the mountains. We'll go on some hikes and stuff. So yeah, feel free to make your way out here. If you're looking at it, if you're already making your summer plans, I'm just double checking, but I believe bitcoinrodeo.com, or is it the, yes, bitcoinrodeo.com. There's nothing up there right now because, the info for the next one will be coming up soon. But yeah, you can always, and there's a Twitter handle for it as well, Bitcoin Rodeo.
Oh, that's perfect. The reason I was asking for that, is it sounds like you're going to have the first week of July open. And so we're inviting you to come out to Bitcoin Alaska. It'll be held July 5th and 6th. In Juneau. So that's kind of a short drive and then pop over the pass for you.
Yeah, there's probably direct flights to somewhere in Alaska from where I am.
It could be, but it's going to be a great conference. The conference is the 5th and the 6th of, 5th and 6th of July. But we're going to do a lot of pre-conference events, starting on the 2nd. So we definitely like to get you to come out if you're available. I know one of the events, with the purchase of a whale pass is going to be a trip up Tracy Fjord. So going on a private cruise. So this will be really the only Bitcoin conference where when you purchase a whale pass, you'll be able to see whales, during the conference.
That's awesome. I feel like this is we should maybe, do some coordination where people can kind of hop from one to the next. That'd be pretty cool. Maybe we'll chat.
Definitely. I'll pass it along to the counterparts. And actually, we have them right here. Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska handle. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Ben. Just wanted to just say it's, I love your material. I spoke to you at Santa Monica at one point and we were talking about trying to get a remote training stuff for some of the people in Juneau on the cold card. I'm still interested, but let's do it in person next year. There's some businesses that are curious about how to, accept Bitcoin and there's a lot of aspects of Bitcoin that I am familiar with. That's not one of them. I'm not a pro in that area. It'd be nice to have somebody up here who could teach a class. You know, we could work on setting up a location and if you're willing to do that. To get up here though, you just drive from Calgary to Skagway. It's like an 8-hour ferry ride from Skagway. You could leave your car up there and ferry down and just, rent a car here or you can just ferry your car on down. And it would be sweet to do some kind of a tour like, Coinfather's driving up from Wisconsin and he's going to be driving to Skagway going right through Calgary because I told him to go through Banff and Jasper. Now I got to tell him about your conference. He'll probably stop through.
That's awesome. Well, maybe we can make a freedom convoy all the way to Juneau.
That would be sick. Yeah. So I definitely want to stay in touch. And, if you'd really be willing to do something up here, I know there's demand for what you do. I love your material.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the invite from you guys. I'm going to look and do some considering here and see if I might be able to make it up. I like the idea of a road trip. That'd be pretty cool. So let me stew on that for a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Bob, you have your hand up. So go ahead, sir. Fire away your question.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, I know we're coming up to the end of the show, so feel free to touch on any of this that you can. But I wanted you to maybe chime in on two topics related to Bitcoin, and recent topics, I guess, based on privacy and then this whole idea of being censored by YouTube. I saw, the fork of Samurai Wallet, Ashigaru that you were censored recently. And so I was wondering if you could talk about privacy. Maybe a little bit on Samurai and then censorship and the things you've noticed.
Yeah. The YouTube thing. If anybody didn't kind of see, I mean, YouTube is obviously a centralized platform and they can very easily censor really anything that they want. Which is unfortunate. And I've had run-ins with it before. Simply Bitcoin got actually just removed from YouTube for about a week. And the only reason they got the channel back was because they were large enough that they were able to raise enough of a stink. But there's been Bitcoiners from other parts of the world that don't have a large enough channel where they're just gone. Like they'll just get channels deleted. And that's not exclusive to Bitcoin, but so I had a seeming shadow ban for I don't know how long. Looking back, it might have been the past month and a bit or 2 months even. But basically I discovered it as I was doing this video. Somebody did a fork of Samurai Wallet. And I was doing a two-part video. So one setting up your Dojo node and the other getting the new fork called Ashigaru and connecting it to your node. And so in doing that, I discovered that I was wanting to grab the first video to put in the show notes of the second one so people could easily find it. And so I did a quick search and usually if I search, it'll just come right up typically. And so I kept on getting more and more specific with my searches, adding in the name of the channel, making sure I said like Ashigaru, Dojo, Node, BTC Sessions. I was like, why is this not coming up? What in the hell? And then I even went to the video, copied the exact title of the full video and searched it, and it would not come up. And so then I knew something was up. And then I started expanding my search to other stuff of mine. And normally, again, the channel's been up for 8.5 years. So typically, if there's something that I've covered, the result for that thing will be somewhere in the first few options, or at the very least on that first page of videos. And I'm searching and I'm like, why is none of my stuff coming up here? And then it was even bad enough where if I specifically searched a topic and then added in the name of the channel, it would pull me up because you specified me, but it would pull up other videos that were completely useless and not pertaining to the thing that you were looking for. And so it just seemed very, very blatantly on purpose that it was like screwing with people's ability to actually easily find the educational material they were looking for. Again, I kind of threw it out there online and said like, what is going on? Can anybody check and confirm that this is happening to them too? And it was a bit, but I think, it raised enough of a stink and a bunch of people kind of started searching and specifically clicking that it kind of like, I don't know what happened, but it seems to have resolved itself. But again, just very, very tricky and around the censorship stuff. And right now, the problem is that in particular, I'm looking to try and educate newcomers as they get into Bitcoin so that they can find the tools easily and begin their learning trajectory. And in order to do that, I need to be where normal, everyday, non-Bitcoin people are, and I need to catch them when they're starting to search. And so, you know, obviously Nostr is a great tool when it comes to censorship resistance, but it's not yet a great tool when it comes to finding easily accessible content because no non-Bitcoiners or very few non-Bitcoiners are there. And so, you know, you can be stuck between a rock and a hard place when you're trying to both be censorship resistant, but reach people where they are because everybody's on centralized censorship prone platforms. I would be posting tutorials on X, but unfortunately right now they don't have the infrastructure that makes it work in that sense. It's great for live streams, but when it comes to tutorial videos that you need to be able to like index and search up very easily and create playlists and be able to like find the resources that you need, it's kind of useless. It's kind of shitty right now. So, you know, hopefully that changes. And then at least I've got a secondary platform where I can just put all of the educational stuff and people can easily find it and see videos. But right now, and I know some people have recommended Rumble, that may be a plausible one. But yeah, right now I'm kind of at a loss of what to do. There are some promising things coming up in Nostr, but again, I got to meet people where they are. And so it's tough in and around that censorship piece. But just to tag one other thing in around the censorship part of it, in regards to privacy tools, I was mentioning Ashigaru is a fork of Samurai. And so this has been a rough year for Bitcoin privacy. Obviously Samurai gets shut down, founders get arrested. You previously had Wasabi Wallet kind of bend the knee and say, oh, well, we'll play nice and we will, begin to do chain analysis before we allow people to coin join. And it was kind of all for naught because then they ended up just sunsetting their coordinator anyways. But what I'm kind of seeing now is people are more in, are kind of making tools that intentionally anticipate top-down pressure, and attempted censorship, which is great because it's kind of like Bitcoin privacy is moving from its Napster moment where you can just point and say, shut it down, to its BitTorrent moment where, you know, one person seeding, disappears and then 100 others pop up in their stead. And so it's more a game of whack-a-mole now. And so, we've seen that where like Wasabi sunsets their coordinator. Well, now we're starting to see like privately and anonymously run coordinators pop up that you can sub in. Samurai wallet gets shut down. Somebody anonymously forks the protocol, puts it on Tor so that you can access it, and then also requires a privacy preserving Dojo node in order to use it. You know, Join Market has continued to function because it's a protocol. And then we're also seeing the start of coin join coordination via Noster, via something called Joinster. So we're seeing lots of cool things that are much more resilient than previously. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that develop.
Yeah, thanks for answering that question. I think you're dead on. I wonder if you think it's your channel. That's, and just a quick follow up here, Coleman. I wonder if you think it's your channel in particular, or do you think it's this broader attack on basically getting information out for people to be able to self custody Bitcoin?
I think it's broad. I think, it just happens to, like, who knows exactly what's going on in the background, because they don't give up that information. But, you know, you saw the Rogan interview that you just literally couldn't look up, immediately after it happened. So, like, it's clear that some of it's, quite intentional. And then it's just whether or not you happen to get caught up in it. And sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And, you know, sometimes simply Bitcoin does and sometimes all of you will. And the answer is just to hopefully gradually funnel people to platforms where that's not going to happen, or protocols rather, where that can't happen.
Ben, I want to be really respectful of your time. So do you have time for just one more question?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So to wrap everything up, what are the absolute best in class top three products in the entire Bitcoin space?
Oh, that is a tall order, my friend. Okay.
you can think on it for a bit.
Okay. So, I'm going to outline a few things, just in like kind of using Bitcoin day to day that have been, integral to, my Bitcoin use this year. And this isn't necessarily saying like they're the best things out of every possible thing you can do with Bitcoin, but, what I've been really excited about this year. Okay. So, the upgrade to the cold card queue was awesome. I love the QR scanning, and, I've got it in such a way now where, basically when I want to send a transaction, I'm typically using Sparrow Wallet on my desktop, and I'll set up the transaction. I'll pull out the queue. I'll scan it with a QR code so I don't have to plug it in. And then when I sign the transaction, the little screen on my pops up and it says NFC, and I can just grab any phone. It doesn't even need to be my own phone, and it doesn't even need to have a Bitcoin wallet on it. You just tap the phone to the cold card screen and it will say, do you want to open up your browser? And if you say yes, it will open up mempool.space and it will broadcast the transaction for you, which is super cool. So this is kind of my default way that I use the queue now. Outside of that, I have my Start9 Bitcoin node at home, which I've obviously loved for quite some time. I really love Start9's approach. But something that is absolutely game changing this year in regards to Lightning, like self-hosted Lightning, is Albi Hub. So Albi used to be like this custodial Lightning solution, but, they've kind of shifted and just created, you can use like a cloud service to host a Lightning node with them, or you can run it on your own hardware. And so I did a video on how to cloud host it if you want to, but I also show how to host it on your own hardware if you have it. And so I have it on my Start9 node. And basically, if you've ever tried to run your own Lightning node before, it's scary and it's tedious and it's a bit of a nightmare. But Albi Hub made it so much easier. And it basically, when you boot up that program, it'll say, okay, well, step one, you're probably going to want to do this. And then you're probably going to want to do this. And then you're probably going to want to connect a wallet to it. And so it just walks you through the steps very simply. You can automatically get like an inbound channel. And so I basically started my Bitcoin Lightning node from scratch with AlbiHub, and then I connected it, and then I was able to connect my, I'm using Zeus to connect to it, but it is seamless. No more dicking around with trying to get a Tor connection, none of that. I boot up Zeus from anywhere in the world. I was just in Lugano Plan B in Switzerland, and I'll open up Zeus, and inside of 2 seconds, the wallet opens up and sees my Lightning node balance, and I'm able to spend seamlessly. And I was buying something in Lugano. I said, oh, this is coming from my node back home in Canada. And the guy says, oh, cool. This is going back to my Lightning node at home in Austria. And we're both using AlbiHub. So that tool is incredible. And then the last one that I'll mention is, I accept a lot of Bitcoin payments for various things. I do invoices. I do all of that. Zaprite, which is, Parker Lewis, Will and John, the team there, they're awesome. But this is basically just like a simple online portal. You can sign up for it, and then you can plug in your own self-custody Lightning wallets. And so the way it works right now is any invoice that I send out, it will automatically, like, there's a nice landing page. People can choose to pay in Bitcoin or Lightning or whatever. They also have fiat options. So if you do have to send out invoices and you require, or most of your merchants that are paying you are still paying in fiat, you can have fiat side by side with Bitcoin. And furthermore, you know, the Bitcoin is never custodial. It sends directly to wherever you want it to go. Zaprite never holds it. They're just a nice web interface. But my favorite thing about it is you are able to add a premium on fiat payments. And I do this to the extreme because I think it communicates what I want to communicate, which is if you're going to pay me in inferior money, I'm going to charge more. And so I started with a 10% premium on fiat, and people kept paying me in it. It's 20% now. And lo and behold, everybody pays me in Bitcoin, and I love it.
You charge 20% premium on fiat?
I do. I don't want it. I do not want it.
No, that's amazing. I do like it, and I've tinkered around with Zaprite, and you're right. It's absolutely amazing and how easy it is just to kind of plug in and go ahead and link it up to everything. I was trying to find AlbiHub. Is it ALBY or ALBI?
ALBY. So the website, getalbi.com, is where you can kind of read about it and everything. But if you're running a Start9 node or if you're running an Umbral node, AlbiHub is on both of those. And I imagine it'll be on some of the others too. You'll be able to run it eventually on, you know, there's a number of other plug and play node options, but I know for sure Start9 and Umbral has it. And then you can also just do cloud hosting with them. But it's super easy to deal with. It's really cool.
Okay, perfect. I was just making sure I found the right one. So I found them, and I threw a link up on the Nest for anybody interested. And then I'll throw one up for Zaprite as well. But did anyone, any final questions for Ben before we start wrapping up the show? Bob or Wade?
No, just wanted to say thanks for coming on. Always great to hear from you. Good to hear about, you know, the video stuff that you're doing and the, you said it's Bitcoin Mentor. Is that right? Maybe you can give one last plug for that.
Yeah, exactly. So Bitcoin Mentor is a company that I co-founded, and basically, it came to fruition because this time last year, in December, even, with taking a week off in and around Christmas, I was doing one-on-one bookings with people, helping people through whatever it is, like custody or multi-sig or running a node, all, you know, anything that you might do in your Bitcoin learning journey. And I was inundated. I had 29 bookings last December, and I came to the realization there's no way in hell I could possibly handle all of this on my own. And so I set out with my co-founder Mike to create a company called Bitcoin Mentor, and we aggregated just some of the best, most incredible Bitcoin educators We had 350 people submit to become Bitcoin mentors, and we settled on 16, and we put them through the gamut. They are awesome. And so basically BitcoinMentor.io, if you feel like you're a Bitcoin Luddite, and this isn't meant to be derogatory, but you've gotten to a place in your Bitcoin learning journey where you learned a handful of things, you did them a few years ago, and now you're like, is this good enough? Am I secure enough? Or you just feel like you're at a standstill and you're like, I need to level up. I need to run a node. I need to learn multisig. I need to learn whatever. This is where you go. You can go to Bitcoin Mentor and a member of the team. First of all, you can do a free 15-minute call and just kind of chat through, this is where I'm at, this is where I'd like to be. And then you can kind of get led down, well, maybe you go down this learning trajectory here. And you can book one-on-one sessions and just be handheld through everything. Outside of that, if you feel like you're already leveled up, but you don't have the capacity to be teaching everybody that you already know, you can also, it's in the Nest, I believe I put it up there, but you can also sign up to be a Bitcoin Mentor affiliate. And so, the way I like to frame it is you can stack sats while new Bitcoiners stack skills. And so the way it works is, there's a link up there for, to become an affiliate. Anytime that you send somebody our way and they book a session, you get $21 worth of Bitcoin that gets paid out at the end of the month. And that's not just for one session. It's for every single session that they book in perpetuity. So if somebody comes through and books 10 hours with us, you're going to get $210. And so, highly recommend, it's a good way to stack sats if you want to, level people up and also earn some Bitcoin in the process. You can just find that in the Nest, but yeah, there's my shill.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. So that it's up there. And I also have it at the beginning. The Bitcoin Mentor, is right up there as well. So click on that link, make sure you follow. And so make sure, Ben, so we're going to send everyone to your Twitter, handle and to YouTube, correct?
Yeah. You can also find me on Noster. Let's make ourselves a little bit more censorship resistant. You can just search me up, btcsessions@getalbi.com. And you should find me over there. Primal's a good app to get started on if you're not currently on Noster.
Oh, that's perfect. So thank you so much, Ben, for coming out. And again, I want to apologize for last minute on you, but I'm very happy you were able to make it out today. And I hope you really consider coming out to Juneau for the Bitcoin Alaska Conference. I know that there'll be a lot of people who'll be happy to see you there. And Juneau's just amazing place to be in the summer. So we hope. Yeah. So, again, thank you guys so much. And that'll be it. Thank everybody for tuning in, everybody who participated, everyone who threw up the emojis, everyone who just had us on the background to tune out all the voices in your head. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to, everybody involved. So again, we're doing this again tomorrow, 10 a.m. We're going to have, Ken Egan, a former CI office, worker. So he will be joining us. So that'll be a great one to hit as well. He does a lot of work with the Bitcoin Policy Institute. I don't want to miss that. That'll be tomorrow. There won't be a video podcast tonight with Shane and Mike. I think we're pushing it off till next week. And so that's it. And like Ben said earlier in the show, the best way to start spreading Bitcoin and spreading message is to start local. Start with your neighbors. Start with your local community. Don't try and change the whole city. Just try and change your five closest friends, your five neighbors across from you, and that'll start building traction, and you have more people to help spread the message. So get out there, have some fun, but don't shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yes number. Hey, thank you, Ben. I really appreciate you coming on.
Cheers.